This is Sports Saturday with Brad Porter on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Back on Sports Saturday, Sports Radio 810 WHB in Kansas City with a little bit of a dry spell in the weather, but the rain is coming. I've just looked at my weather app, and this afternoon is like 90%, 100%, 100%, 90%, so it's coming at some point. If you've got outdoor activities, a lot of graduation parties this weekend, so just be warned. My name is Brad Porter. Chris Bohlig is running the show. Coming up at 1 o'clock today, if you're a golf fan, we'll have the PGA Championship here on Sports Radio 810 WHB, and that'll take you all the way down to 7:30 p.m. when Sporting KC hosts Vancouver at Children's Mercy Park. You can hear that live here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. And talking a little soccer now, the first-time guest on the program, Nicholas Mendola from NBCSports.com. Nicholas, how are you on this Saturday afternoon? Oh, are you still there, Nicholas?
Hello?
Hello? We got you. How are you?
No, I'm doing pretty well.
Good. How are you guys? Fantastic. We've had a couple of headset issues this morning, so I may have missed that. We had a lightning strike near the studios, knocked us out for a couple of seconds. Hey, I was
no worries.
I was reading your story on NBCSports.com, which Chris Bohlig had found, about Bruce Arena returning to Major League Soccer, and more specifically the New England Revolution. And Nicholas, I've thought that Bruce Arena would come back at some point, maybe take a year or two off, but that he would be back in Major League Soccer. I just didn't guess it would be with the New England Revolution.
Yeah, I guess you'd have to think that New England and Arena also has confidence that New England's ready to spend now, that New England's willing to take their soccer team seriously. And it had been a while, right, going back to the days of Taylor Twellman when they were a consistent threat to compete for MLS Cup. And Arena's still a very good coach. I think, tactically, motivation-wise, he'll do fine in MLS. I do worry if he believes that the league is still where it was a few years ago, which obviously you guys, where you are, know very much how much it's changed.
Right.
So, you know, there's always a threat when it comes to guys like him and other people who have had monumental success. He's a legend in the game. There's no doubt about it. I mean, I'm not particularly a big fan of his, but there's no debating that he's an all-time legend. My question is he going to adapt, or is he just going to think, hey, this is what worked in the past, and it's going to work again?
We're talking with Nicholas Mendola here, sticking with Bruce Arena here for a few minutes. So Bruce Arena is back. So there's a couple of things I'm reading into this. One, as you mentioned, the organization's been left to rot since the days of Taylor Twellman, and the Kraft family, for as much success as they've had with the New England Patriots, are kind of looked at as not taking Major League Soccer all that seriously. So is this a move? You fire Brad Friedel, you bring in Bruce Arena. Is this any kind of a signal to the fans of, yeah, we're serious, maybe we've made a couple of mistakes, but here you go. We got the guy who knows more about American soccer than anybody else.
Yeah, I have to think so. And I think it does signal that to the fan base. I think it sends a lot of the right signals to the players as well. It's just a question of, are we in the media and are those who are critical of Arena thinking that maybe he's got some work to do to reclaim that sort of specter that loomed over the league? Is he, how far off is he from that? I do think it sends all the right signals. But again, it can be a PR game, right? Like a few weeks ago when the reports were out there, and I made one report as well, that Red Bulls were looking into getting Thierry Henry, or when Arena himself brought Landon Donovan back. The question is, and I believe I'm not mixing up the era, the question becomes, is he still capable of operating at that legendary level? Because when he was at his best, he changed the game of soccer in America, or at least he helped do so.
We're speaking with Nicholas Mendola here. You mentioned changing tactics, and I'm wondering, in part of your article, you talk about the World Cup collapse, and that wasn't all on him. Jurgen Klinsmann owned a lot of that, but the slide down the stretch, Bruce Arena says, I'm proud of what we did. We won a bunch of games, but you know this, if you're the national team coach, it's the World Cup that matters, and to a less extent, the Gold Cup or other international events. But that finish against Trinidad and Tobago left a bad taste in the mouths of a lot of fans. Pardon me, I'll get it out here. And that's still he's still wearing that a little bit, and he's been asked about it since he was announced as the New England manager.
I think this is one of the big problems I have with him. I think we would not be asking him about it if he just owned it. It's been everybody's fault what is, and it's almost like he's doubling down on it. And the quote that really, I mean, I went in to write about that press conference thinking, well, what's he going to do in New England and this and that? And he goes and put out there, I'm proud of how we finished. We only lost two games that year. Well, two of the last four.
Right.
And another one was a draw. And one of them was against Trinidad, an already eliminated Trinidad and Tobago's B team.
Right.
So I've got a lot of issues with him. There are a lot of MLS coaches I would have chosen. I do like the hire of Greg Berhalter. I think you guys would probably be with me and not with me in thinking that Peter Vermees would have been a terrific choice.
Yes.
But instead, they went back to the well with Arena and ran the old boys network, and it didn't work out. And in some ways, it's not surprising.
I think for soccer fans here in Kansas City, the prospect of Peter Vermees getting a shot at the U.S. national team, the men's national team, for one, I consider him a friend of mine. I've known him since he played here in 2000, so I've been around him for a long time. I have the utmost respect for him, and I was really hoping he would get the opportunity. But on the other side, you also don't want to lose the best manager you've had in the history of the organization.
Right. Yeah, well, that's kind of why I made the point of, you know, you'd like it and you wouldn't like it. It'd be a badge of honor. It'd be something that probably took the love for the national team there, which is already very high, to the next level. But at the same time, then you lose your guy. And I think in a lot of ways, although I'm sure right now, given the slow start to the season, that there are some questions about it, in a lot of ways, what he's done and the way he's massaged the roster and the way he's made different pieces work is just another, and different systems work, it's just another nod in what a legend he is. And maybe, I think it's fair to say, given the fact that you guys, like where I'm from in Buffalo, aren't in New York, aren't in L.A., aren't even in Toronto, he's somehow flown under the radar because he is an absolute legend of the American game.
Absolutely. We're speaking with Nicholas Mendola here, talking Bruce Arena back in Major League Soccer, and then I'll hit Sporting up. What is it? What happened with, well, obviously Brad Friedel was not performing or getting his team to perform, but what is it with these coaches who either go to Europe to play or come from Europe, like Jurgen Klinsmann and Brad Friedel, who tell the players, you know, if this happened when I was in England or if this happened when I was in Germany, fans would have been waiting outside the stadium to beat you up after the game or throw stuff at you. And Friedel rolled out the same darn thing. It doesn't sit well with the players. The fans don't like it. Why are these guys either from Europe or with European ties to their playing days, why do they feel the need to say these things?
I think the question is, why do they feel the need to say them in public?
Yes.
Because what it does is, I think that's a fair point that you make to your players, saying, hey, look, we've got it easier here, in a simpler sense. I don't mean it's actually easier, but this is, we just got to go out there and do our job and think about, you know, let's prepare ourselves for what could become a more serious level. And when I say more serious level, I mean in markets that aren't like KC, in markets that aren't like Portland, where they're taking their team extremely seriously at a high level. I think that the issue is, when you say it in public, it not only makes the fans think, well, you're downgrading the quality of our fanhood, you're downgrading the quality of our league, you're downgrading the quality of the player, which is the other thing that comes into consideration. If you're a player hearing that, and it's just reinforcing, I guess, to you that, hey, look, you could be somewhere bigger. And I don't like that. I think where MLS has come in this time has been remarkable. And I'm a huge critic of Major League Soccer. I should put that out there.
Right.
I'm a huge critic. But at the same time, you can be critical of it while acknowledging that what it's done in 20-plus years is unbelievable in catching up to the quality of some teams and clubs and leagues that have been around for over 100.
And you can see every year Major League Soccer plays a little bit better in that Champions League against the Mexican teams. Now, we haven't been able to do it yet, but you can see it getting just a little bit closer. We're speaking with Nicholas Mendola from NBCSports.com. Quickly, because I know you're short on time today, Sporting KC, when you look at it from afar, with anywhere from 10 to 12 players missing each of the last three games, it got so bad this week, down to 14 healthy players. You can have 18 for a game, that they had to use an emergency rule that the league has in place to sign a player from their minor league team. This team, when it's healthy, is pretty good, but right now it's a bad situation for Sporting.
It is, and I think what is fortunate and unfortunate, again, we keep going to these areas of dichotomy. With Sporting, this is a team that has all the goods when healthy to compete for the Supporters' Shield. And I think when you walk into a season, you're expecting that. You're expecting a chance for MLS Cup, an extended Open Cup run, and you can have one of the best teams, especially in the East this year. But instead, you get these injuries, and it's disappointing because now you're looking at a whole summer of playing catch-up like Toronto FC had to try and do last year in somewhat of a similar situation with the Champions League, et cetera. So at the same time, though, you're such a dangerous team. There still is the Open Cup. Maybe you have to admit that with LAFC humming along the way they are and the lack of competition back in the East, maybe it is going to be fine to just say, look, we'll focus on the tournaments. We'll deal with the Gold Cup absences, and should we have them? And for now, look, we're just going to worry about getting into one of those top spots, getting as high as we can, getting a home playoff game and going from there. Because the quality is certainly there, and there's nothing to worry about from that angle. But again, I think as a fan base, you deal with this the same way that maybe the Golden State Warriors, maybe not at that point, but that level of dominance, or pick your favorite basketball team does when one of their stars is out for 20 games and you realize, wow, it's going to be hard for us to finish first in the league.
Well, the positive side for Sporting fans is they're still only 3 points out of the playoff zone. Things can change, you know, over a 3 to 4 week period. You can go from 8th place to 3rd place. It's just that's how things work in this league. And when it comes to competing for the U.S. Open Cup, I'll just tell you this, Nicholas. Maybe we're pretty even as a fan base with Seattle and in the desire to win U.S. Open Cups. It's a big deal here.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
All right, absolutely.
Yeah, I admire, a lot of what you guys do. And one of my colleagues who's from your area, Andy Edwards.
One of my top guys. We did a TV show together for a number of years.
Yeah, he's a young legend, we put it that way. But Andy he does a great job of spreading the gospel of KC soccer. And I think there is no team. I mean, it's the upper echelon, right? It's Portland, it's KC. As a club, our club here, FC Buffalo, is in the 4th tier. But you look to those clubs that have established themselves and represent American soccer, and not just a positive light, but a very serious light. And KC is one of those. So we know you take the Open Cup seriously. And frankly, we were all rooting for you in the Champions League. So we're hoping you give it another kick down the road.
I thought Sporting was playing well in the Champions League too, but when they got to that final step, the talent level was in the first 10 minutes of that game. You watch it and we're like, oh no, the this team is really good.
Yeah, it was all, and again, that is a level of letting them spend, and I don't know how much that would affect Sporting KC, but it'd be interesting to see what would happen if MLS and this part of North American soccer opens up the wallet a little bit more and says, hey, go ahead and compete with this Mexican team for depth.
Hey, Nicholas, thank you very much. I appreciate your time so much, and thanks for the updates on everything, and we'll have to see how the Bruce Arena experiment works out for New England. It's going to get better. I just don't know how much better.
Yeah, I loved it. Feel free to call anytime. It was a lot of fun.
All right. Hey, thanks, Nicholas. I appreciate it. All right, that's Nicholas Mendola with NBCSports.com. I paused there because I couldn't hear him for a second. I thought his phone was cutting out. So I wonder if the studio still has an issue with that lightning we had earlier.
I could hear him. It must have been something in the studio.
Yeah.
But no, I agree. I think it's that lightning strike is definitely weighing on your headphones right now.
I was looking at, we were talking about Sporting KC at the end there. I was just looking at the injury list for today. It's not updated, but it's still, they're going to have 15 players, and that's it. And some of those players who are going to be on the bench probably would not be there if not for the injuries. They're just not ready. Today they're going to be warm bodies. That's what they're going to be. Emergency situation type players.
And they need points badly.
Yes.
They need points badly today. This is huge. You have to get the points today. You got to get 3. But with the injuries, if you got to get a draw at least. You have to get a draw at least. today to salvage something, because it does not look great for Sporting Kansas City at the moment. But hopefully, you know, you can really tell that this CONCACAF Champions League has really paid a toll on the players in terms of their wear and tear how the work rate that they had to put in to compete in that, and also manage domestic play as well. It's not an easy task.
I was looking at the numbers this morning because I was thinking to myself, when was the last time Sporting won a game? Because it's been a while. It's been since March 30th since Sporting KC has won a game. That was a 2-1 win over Montreal. Since then, in 8 games, it's been 5 losses and 3 draws. Like I said, you got to get points. I mean, you're only 3 points out of the playoff zone now, but as the games slip away, it decreases your chances to get points and get back into that battle for a playoff spot. Because that's what matters. I heard Benny Failhaber on with Seren, I believe, yesterday, and he was talking about the fact that, yes, they have a tendency to look at the standings. Everybody's inclined to do that, but it's more about getting the 1 point or 3 points at a time, because you can't get 6 points today. That's just not going to happen.
Well, and you want to see it. Everyone is saying around the city who maybe is not accustomed to watching a lot of soccer, and this city has been so blessed to have Peter Vermees and a great organization, but this is a trying time right now for the club. This is a tough time, and you have to have a sense of urgency. Mm-hmm. You have to have a sense of urgency in some, because these games matter.
Right.
These games, even though they are in May and the playoffs aren't until, you know, October, these games matter still. You have to get points.
I think that's why you go out and get a Benny Failhaber too. You get a guy who understands the critical nature of games early and also understands the Peter Vermees system and has respect as soon as he walks through the door. Guys won championships. Guys played in World Cups. Played around the world. That's why you make a move like that. But Kansas City, I was just looking at the numbers. The game last week in D.C., Sporting had 15 healthy players. That's just, look, I know 11 guys start the game, but you need 18 guys that you can choose from to go. They had 15. That's not great.
Considering you have 3 subs per game, that leaves you one extra guy.
You know, I heard an interesting conversation. I want to say a conversation. It was a Twitter discussion, so to speak. And I realize this is getting into the weeds for people who are not diehard soccer fans, but I'll just make it real quick. So Taylor Twellman is leading the charge on making sure players who suffer concussions are treated the right way. You get them out of games. You hold them out if they're not ready. Soccer does a bad job of this. Trainer comes out, player says he's okay. When clearly they're not, they get to stay in the game. But Taylor Twellman brought this up, and maybe somebody brought it up to him, that with only 3 substitutions in soccer, should there be an exception for a player who suffers a concussion, which would then encourage teams to be more likely to yank them out of a game? If there's any thought that this player has a head injury or a concussion or is less than 100%, teams would not be, I won't say pressured, wouldn't feel the need to keep a player in the game because it's a tight game, because it's an important game. Making an exception for the substitution rule for a player with concussion. I'm all for that. I'm good with that.
Yeah, you've seen even in the stage, in Champions League too,
right,
there have been some brutal head-to-head collisions and guys going back on the field without even getting any concussion protocol or whatnot.
Serious attempt to evaluate the player.
And when guys are running like that and you have a concussion going up and down, that is dangerous. That is not safe.
No. So I'm all for Taylor Twellman's support of that. All right, we will coming up on a timeout here, and we'll come back and we'll have our final half hour of the show. Then we'll hand it off to ESPN. Then at 1 o'clock, coverage of the PGA Championship takes over, and that'll lead you right into 7:30, Sporting KC in Vancouver. And immediately after the game, you'll have the final whistle with Dave Borchardt. Quick timeout. My name is Brad Porter. Chris Bollig is running the show. You're listening to Sports Saturday on Sports Radio 810 WHB. I know that's a horn, but it almost sounds like the bird that was outside of my window yesterday.
Little Cypress Hill.
I love Cypress Hill.
Jed Marshall.
Yeah.
So,
and this is not one that gets played on the radio ever.
No, this is a low key jam. So,
I love me some Cypress Hill.
Mm-hmm.
Good stuff. I don't think we've ever used that one before on the show.
No.
Put that in the rotation.
We'll have to get it in the rotation. Absolutely.
I like that one. Back on Sports Saturday, Sports Radio 810 WHB in Kansas City. My name is Brad Porter. Chris Bollig is running the show. We're into the final half hour of our Sports Saturday show, and then we'll be back tomorrow from 9 to 12 for more fun and frivolity.
We got some great stuff.
Who do we have lined up for tomorrow?
We have Matt.
I told you I always leave my guest list. Matt Verderam is going to be on the show.
We got Howard Richman talking to PGA.
PGA, yeah.
So it looks like Brooks Koepka is going to run away with it. And then at 11, Michael Aktisa from CBS Sports, MLB writer, had a great, really great piece about Hunter Dozier this week.
Okay.
So I thought we should get him on and talk a little about that. The one bright spot for the Royals.
Right.
You know?
You mentioned Howard Richman coming on tomorrow, good friend of ours, works for the Golf Course Superintendents Association, but he had a chance to go out to Bethpage Black last week before the tournament, check it out, see what the setup was all about. And there's Brooks Koepka. If he holds on to win this, he will hold back-to-back U.S. Opens and PGA Championships. It's pretty stout. For a guy that doesn't win a lot of regular tournaments, he plays big in the
majors.
Saving
him for the most important, the biggest purses.
I heard the discussion yesterday. Ricky Fowler has, what, 6 or 7 tour wins, maybe 8?
He has a good amount of tournament wins.
But does not have a major.
Nope.
Brooks Koepka could be looking at his 4th major, but only has 6 or 7 or 8 total tournament wins. Whose career would you rather have? I don't think it's a hard one.
I think major, of course. I think anybody would say the majors, because that's what goes into the history books, at least. I mean, the wins, tournament wins do go with it, but when you talk about golf or tennis,
it's majors.
How many
right.
have you won?
And for Ricky Fowler, he makes a ton more money on endorsements because he's a likable guy. He's a good-looking guy.
Puma. He's got the Puma.
He's got all that going on. And Koepka doesn't make nearly as much in endorsements. He's a great player, but let's just say he doesn't have a lightning personality. Not saying he's a bad guy.
I just listened to an interview with him on a podcast. And,
Is he better in a relaxed setting?
He was pretty funny. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed listening to him. But it all depends, I guess, what setting he's in. And, of course, golf is a very serious sport in nature in terms of not really being able to show your emotions.
There's some good podcasts out there that I think put players in a more relaxed setting. I don't know if you ever listened to the guys from No Laying Up. They do a great golf podcast. When I'm taking a walk with the dog, that's something I'll listen to. I wouldn't just normally turn on a whole show about golf, but it's entertaining stuff. They have fun with it. They don't take themselves seriously.
That's always the best when it's an easy listen. Don't take themselves too seriously. I mean, there's just so much out there there's so much content.
Koepka may get a chance to run away with it. We'll see if he can keep it rolling. Some of the best competition was eliminated on Friday, including Tiger Woods.
Plus five, I think he was.
Plus seven. Missed it by one shot.
Okay.
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah.
What I was saying was he's gearing up for the U.S. Open because Pebble Beach is his – he's done so well in the majors at Pebble Beach. And that's where the U.S. Open is this year in June. So I think he won the Masters, you know.
Took 4 weeks off.
Yeah. So, he's like, PGA Championship, let's gear up for the U.S. Open.
Getting ready for that. So Tiger's out. Sergio Garcia's out. Bubba Watson is out. John Rahm is out. He was expected to compete. Patrick Reed, former Masters champion, is out. Ian Poulter is out. And the one that made me kind of sad, John Daly out. I mean, look, he wasn't going to make
it. He was on a golf cart.
He was on a cart and he could barely walk. Did you see him try to like reach into the hole and pick his golf ball out after putts? Oh, I felt bad. I kind of felt bad for him, but then I kind of don't because he doesn't exactly take care of himself.
And he admits that. He fully admits that.
Yeah, be who you are. Embrace it.
That is what he is. So.
He's smoking and drinking and never working out. And
he's having fun.
Not eating that great. Doesn't he have a deal with Hooters where he can...
Yeah, I think he does have a Hooters deal.
Or he can eat there all the time or whatever.
Yeah, not the not the healthiest of meals. Not getting you to your peak performance.
No. He's not exactly hitting the gym at 5 o'clock every morning. But... he is who he is, and
we love him for that.
Be who you are. That's right. Embrace it. Did you hear Tiger's kind of slight towards him, directed at him? Was it Wednesday or Thursday?
I think I saw something on Twitter, but I didn't actually look into it.
So somebody asked him about John Daly getting an exemption to use a cart, because you can't use a cart on the PGA Tour. But if you're if you're playing in the PGA Championship and you're a former winner, they grant you exemptions. So he got permission to ride in the cart. Somebody asked Tiger Woods about it, and he says, well, I played on a broken leg. That was kind of his answer.
A torn ACL.
And a torn ACL. Yeah. So, a little dig from Tiger.
Hey, let's make it fun. Yeah. Let's make it all fun.
Here's, I was scanning through some NFL.com stories, and I came across, do you like lists, when people do lists of things?
I mean, they're fun to talk about, especially at this point in the season. It doesn't really...
No.
Have much merit with me in terms of the legitimacy of them,
right?
In terms of at this point in the season,
it's kind of fodder for discussion. These lists that come out all the time: top 10 this, top 11 that, who, top three teams that totally failed the draft, top three
teams
that
nailed
the
draft. Training camp yet?
No, it's not even training camp yet. But for interest's sake, Adam, is it Sheen or Shine? S H E I N. I'll go with Sheen on that. Has the nine most complete teams right now in the National Football League. The nine most complete teams on May 19th. I'm going to roll that out there, which is fine. Where do you think, are the Chiefs on this list for top nine? Or if they are, where would you rank them?
I'll go number 7.
Pretty close. Number 5. He ranks the Chiefs as the number 5 most complete team in the National Football League. And I'll tell you what he wrote. He said, still waiting to see the status of Tyreek Hill, what it's going to be for this year, but dealing in what we know, Patrick Mahomes is the best player in the NFL. He's a magician, and it's scary to think the reigning MVP is only scratching the surface. Travis Kelce is the best tight end in football. After the receiving core still has depth and talent beyond Tyreek Hill. He likes the acquisition of Frank Clark, Tyrann Mathieu, gigantic pickups on the defense. Clark is an upgrade over Dee Ford, especially in new coordinator Steve Spagnuolo's defense, and the Honey Badger provides a presence. Eric Berry, Casey's all-time, I just skipped over a sentence here, likes the Honey Badger being back and hasn't had a multitude of health issues like Eric Berry had had. Casey's defense was shaky throughout the 2018 season. That's being generous. And the unit failed when it mattered most in the AFC title game. So with a massive overhaul, was the only way to go. I agree with all that.
Yeah, 100%. I agree full-heartedly. I mean, at this point, the Chiefs' defense, what do you do at corner at this point? If you're not going to make a move, if Patrick Peterson's not in the picture for you, what do you do? Are you expecting Bashaud Breeland and Kendall Fuller to hold down the fort for you all season? Or maybe an undrafted...
Bashaud Breeland is going to make a huge difference.
I mean,
you might as well try.
Charvarius Ward, is he going to have
that
same...
I thought he came on pretty good last
year.
Yeah,
I mean, but let's see a full season of work. We'll see. Let's see if that consistency will continue. But Charvarius Ward is not a true lockdown number one guy who's going to go get you 5 interceptions. Unless he surprises me this season and goes out and gets 5 interceptions, who knows? I don't know. But
I hope he does. I hope that's a good... I hope you jinxed him in a good way with that one.
Maybe. We'll see. But it's just... it's going to be... The cornerback is... Other than... the quarterback on the offensive side of the ball. The cornerback in today's NFL is, I would say, the most valuable position.
Yes.
On the defense.
100% agree. 100%.
And that is where, and you saw it last year with the Chiefs going up against the Patriots. They had a great pass rush.
Mm-hmm.
They had the most sacks in the NFL. But when the quarterback is getting the ball out in 2 seconds or less mm-hmm. every play, you're not going to get to the quarterback. It's not going to happen. And you have to have guys that can match up, go man-to-man, or if you're going to play a zone defense, play a zone defense. But the Chiefs did not play that last year under Bob Sutton. And you're going to have to disrupt route combos. You're going to have to disrupt timing against a guy like Tom Brady. You're going to have to get up, get physical, and press at the line. That's going to have to happen so you can disrupt those Julian Edelman timing routes and those rub routes and whatnot, because they killed the Chiefs on that last year. They just took the Chiefs to school, and they had no answer for it. And so you have to make sure this year, hopefully with Spags, this will be a point of emphasis, which I think right. he will make it. Be physical at the line of scrimmage. Be physical at the point of attack. And even if you get beat, if you're pressing, throw off the timing just a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So even if you get beat, maybe that ball is, you know, a few yards ahead of the receiver at the end of the route.
We had Richard Baldinger, former Chiefs offensive lineman, on the show last week, and Richard knows everybody in the National Football League. Like, he walks onto a field and like 60 guys walk over and say hello. I was asking him about Spagnuolo and the improvements to the defense, and I said, what's the big takeaway for you that's going to make this defense better, other than just switching to the 4-3? And Baldy said, unpredictability. Because every time you saw a Bob Sutton defense, you watched that Patriots game, everything they did was predictable. And the Patriots just picked it apart. And so Steve Spagnuolo is going to come in here with his staff, and they are going to make this defense unpredictable. I mean, the Patriots are a very unpredictable defense. You watch even their older players, they're still unpredictable. And that's what Steve Spagnuolo is going to bring to this team. So we'll see how it works out. So the Chiefs listed number 5 in the rankings of the most complete teams in the National Football League. Who do you think is number 1? Now, again, this is just a writer for NFL.com, Adam Sheen, but it's just his idea.
Most complete team right now.
Yep. I had 2 guesses, and one of them was right, and the other one was number 2.
I don't want to say the Patriots because I'll just say the Patriots. I don't care. I will say the Patriots, but I don't think that's right.
They're number 9.
That's the thing. Like, the Patriots are going to be probably in the AFC Championship at the end of the season,
right.
But maybe the Rams still with all their they lost Sue,
mm-hmm.
but they still have a lot of their pieces from last season.
Rams are number 2. For the most complete teams in the National Football League.
Maybe the Saints? No?
I think you might be overlooking it a little bit. You like this. You like the defense for this
Chargers?
Team. Chargers.
Okay, yeah.
So this is what they're
I kept thinking NFC.
Yeah, right. So the Chargers, listed as the number 1 most complete team in the National Football League, I believe the Chargers are the most talented, balanced, and complete team. Their outstanding GM, Tom Telesco, who I have a lot of respect for, I think he's a terrific GM, put together a deep and loaded roster in the recent bold predictions. He said the Bolts would field the NFL's best defense in 2019. They're going to have Joey Bosa back healthy, had Melvin Ingram. You've got Jerry Tillery on the interior, first-round pick. The linebacker core, Jatavius Brown, Denzel Perryman, and the ageless Thomas Davis, and that strong safety, Derwin James, who I just think is fantastic. So,
yeah, and also adding Nasir Adderley.
Yep, Adderley.
That could be more of, I think Derwin's more of a play at the line. He's range. He can play free safety, but I see Derwin as more of a guy that's going to play more like a Tyrann Mathieu, play at the line, play up on the line of scrimmage, be great in run stopping, but also be able to cover tight ends. And he's got the athletic ability, and then you play Adderley over the top at free safety. That's how I see it. But
yeah.
they have some
Desmond King
dudes
yeah.
on the defensive side of the ball.
Desmond King, and then over on offense, Philip Rivers, who I thought had a terrific season last year, was in the MVP discussion. Versatile running back, Melvin Gordon, Austin Eckler. We saw what he did when Melvin Gordon got hurt last year. Justin Jackson, Keenan Allen. I just never really want to rely on Keenan Allen. He finds ways to get hurt.
He had some talking to do against about the Chiefs secondary.
That was strange that he would just come out and say that. We talk about how bad they are.
At the record against us against the Chiefs in the last three seasons.
Not been good. Not been good. And
look at the record.
And Keenan Allen gets hurt against the Chiefs.
I don't know. I think that's a fine. I mean, at this point, if you look talent wise, at this time, yeah, the Chargers are a phenomenally put together team right now. Coaching, the jury's still out.
Yeah. The season or two.
So we'll see. I don't know. Let's see who else is on
okay.
the rest of this.
So Chargers, again, this is the NFL teams ranked according to most complete. Chargers 1, Rams 2, Cleveland Browns 3 in the most complete. John Dorsey getting to work over there, getting some credit. Still have Jarvis Landry, went out and got Odell Beckham Jr., Baker Mayfield, got thrown into the fire last year. I don't think they had an intention to start him that many games last year.
Well, as I said, if you just look at the roster and you look at the individual pieces, yes.
They went and got Sheldon Richardson.
Yeah, they have phenomenal pieces.
Drafted Greedy Williams.
Yep.
Play on the other side of Denzel Ward.
Yep.
I almost said Desmond Ward. Denzel Ward. So Browns are 3. I can kind of buy that a little bit.
The cohesion will be interesting to see, especially with Freddie Kitchens, who has never been a head coach.
Yeah. And I'll be interested to see. The Browns are going to get a lot of preseason hype because of what Baker Mayfield did last year and going and getting Beckham, but
started with Hard Knocks.
The demise and the rebirth. The Colts are 4. I can dig that.
Yeah, I agree. I think the Colts have...
Chris Ballard's nailed the draft, man. Chiefs are 5. Dallas Cowboys are 6. I don't know if I'm buying that one yet.
If they give Dak Prescott the money, if they pay him 30 a year, like 30 million, 30 between 30 and 35 for, 4 or 5 years, that... I do not like that move for them, but I don't care. I'm not a Cowboys guy, so I'm fine with that.
Guessing they're not spending a lot on Jason Witten. Why would
Jason
you,
Witten?
Why would you do
hey,
that?
Hey, how are you feeling about this new Monday night crew?
Oh, Booger in the
booth
now?
It's just Booger in the booth. I actually like...
I think Booger's pretty good.
He has good insight. Like, I actually don't... I think he just got, kind of thrown away down on the sideline on the Booger Mobile or whatever it was, and... Fans getting upset about not being able to paying for all that money for those seats up front. And
did they get blocked?
This huge TV screen with a rail car going across the sidelines. That was quite a spectacle.
And that TV on the back of it, which fans were told, hey, if we're blocking you, you can watch this TV set. It was like in delay by like 4 seconds or something like that.
No bueno, no.
Yeah. So Jason Witten, they're not paying a lot for him, but why? I don't understand walking away from the game and then going back after a year off and not getting beat up, not having your body beat up.
I think he couldn't take the criticism.
Yeah, and they might have been willing to pull the trigger on him anyway on Monday Night Football.
Yeah, I mean, it just granted, like broadcasting play by play and color is very hard. It is a very hard thing to do, but it just was not. It seemed to get worse as the season continued.
Yes.
So
did not improve.
I think it was smart to part ways.
Yes. So you got the Cowboys at 6, New Orleans Saints at 7, Bears at 8, and New England Patriots at 9. Those are the listing of the 9 most complete teams, according to Adam Sheen from NFL.com. On that note, you got one more thing, Chris?
I was just saying the NFC is loaded.
Yes.
It is, at least, with all the national pundits, the NFC has, when you look at a lot of the power rankings or whatnot, but if these younger quarterbacks in the AFC, like you've seen with Patrick Mahomes right. or Sam Darnold or Josh Allen or whatnot, Baker Mayfield, you might see the tide start to change. But as of now, the NFC is still loaded.
Yes, absolutely. On that note, we'll take a quick time out, come back and wrap things up before the heavy rain rolls in. Hopefully, you can get to your destination. Hopefully, if you're having graduation parties, you got a dry space to go to. You are listening to Sports Saturday. My name is Brad Porter. Chris Bolig is running the show, and you're on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Back for the final few minutes of Sports Saturday here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. My name is Brad Porter. Chris Bolig is running the show, and you're on Sports Radio 810 WHB. And we'll be back tomorrow from 9 to noon for Sports Sunday. How original names we have, Sports Saturday and Sports Sunday. All right, a couple of minutes left in the show. So, Chris, you're
keep it simple.
What's that?
So just keep it simple.
It's easy to remember. are you a Game of Thrones fan?
I am a huge
okay.
Game of Thrones fan.
The series finale is tomorrow.
Indeed it is.
And then I think they're doing prequel series.
I believe there's something like that occurring.
Everybody's making their picks for who's going to sit on the Iron Throne, who's going to rule Westeros. I have a couple of different ideas. One, maybe there'll be no more Iron Throne. Maybe that'll be the case. Maybe it'll be destroyed and nobody wins. And maybe it's like it could also have a Sopranos-type ending where it just doesn't end. It kind of leaves everything open to the imagination.
I think it's going to have an ending. Like Sopranos okay. was just like... Everyone was so upset.
Yes.
After
so
that.
So was I.
It was very
upsetting.
I was upsetting.
Like, that's it? Everybody wanted a murder or something. That's what they wanted. So you can pick an individual to sit on the Iron Throne or rule Westeros. You can say that nobody gets it. I'm still not convinced that Cersei and Jaime are dead.
But you didn't see completely.
No.
It was just...
And I floated that theory last week, and I had a couple of people come back at me on Twitter. Oh, they're dead. They wouldn't do that. And I'm like, yeah, they would.
This is Game of Thrones. They'll do anything.
They'll do anything.
But I think it's going to be... I think there's been some foreshadowing that Jon will be... He'll end up being the
Jon
king.
Jon Snow?
Jon Snow will
even though
be...
he doesn't want it?
Yes. Yes, he doesn't want it, but there's been so much foreshadowing that I just think it's inevitable. And you're seeing glimpses of what, you know, Daenerys has done.
Right.
With last episode.
Boy, Jon was angry.
He's actually been horribly acting in this series. Like this season, his acting has been so bad, and his lines are all the same. Also, where's Bran at?
He's been gone for a while. Yeah,
I don't know.
You know, he's like the favorite right now. I think on Odd Shark, he's like -400. I don't think it's gonna. It better not be Bran.
Let's throw down some bets on that. Let's get on. But it's gonna be fun. I'm excited, even though it's still like. It's still the best TV on right now, even though a lot of people have been complaining about it because the writing hasn't been that good.
That's good, yeah.
But what are you going to do about it?
Here's my kind of working theory, and it'll probably change 10 times between now and tomorrow night. I think Jon Snow is so upset with Daenerys that he takes her out, or Arya takes her out.
That's what I'm thinking. Arya
might
have
it. She's upset too, and then Jon just says, I don't want any of this. Arya already said she was not going back to her hometown. She's not going back to Winterfell again, so
business.
Maybe Jon just says, it's yours. You'll do the right thing. You'll make the right decisions. And Arya sits on the Iron Throne. All right, that's...
30.
Got one more thing? Okay, I thought you had one more. Just a few seconds left. Want to thank all of our great guests today. Zach Barnett, NBCSports.com. Jarrett Sutton, NBA Scout. And Nicholas Mandola from NBCSports.com. Thanks to Chris Bolig. My name is Brad Porter. We'll see you back here Sunday from 9 to 12 on Sports Radio 810 WHB. We're jamming. The thing that jamming was a thing of the best. We're jamming.